King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 8th, 2019. And this is episode number 381. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And yes, we are back for the first show of 2019 after it seemed like a month. I don't know. It seemed like it was longer than when I took my 3.5 months off last year. Jeez, it's been a while. Took Christmas and New Year's because unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I don't know, Christmas and New Year's Day both fell on a Tuesday in 2018. So, took those off their holidays. And, you know, I want you, the listeners, not to worry about having to show up and spend time with your families. Those are big holidays. And I hope everybody had a very safe and happy holidays. Things happen over time off. You know, people get together and, you know, weird things happen. So I'm excited. I think 2019 is going to be a pretty good year in a lot of areas, paranormally and personally. I think it's going to be a very interesting year. And paranormally speaking, I think things are going to be a little weird this year. I don't know. I just got a weird feeling that we're going to be seeing some stuff that we've not seen before. And I think some of these paranormal stories are going to actually be pretty mainstream. I think we're going to hear the mainstream media talking a lot about some of this paranormal topics. And it may not be what you think. It may be something different. I don't know. I don't know what you think, but I just like to keep you guessing out there. And, man, I tell you, everything is just weird this year. It's only the 8th, but we've already seen here in Northeast Ohio a couple of very warm days. Today was 56 degrees, and right now I have, it's about 42 with a 22-mile-an-hour wind gusts. Earlier today we had severe thunderstorms go through the area a couple of times, including some tornado activity. About 30 miles away from here. So weird stuff. I don't know what's going on. Global warming, I don't know what you call it. I call it climate change because it's all natural. It's going to happen whether we, no matter what we dump anywhere, but that's my political view. But it's just weird. It's just weird. And I think the year is going to get weirder. Is that a word? Weirder? I don't know. It is now because I said it. Anyway, welcome to 2019. It's still weird to write, still weird to read it, and plenty of 2020 jokes coming up, I'm sure, for when we hit next year. So what do we have this week? Well, we're going to talk a little bit more of reflection of 2018. Not too much, don't worry. We're not going to rehash the top 10 again. We're going to talk some stories that have happened since we've been off the air over the course of the last 2 weeks, but there's been a lot of stuff happening lately, and including a thylacine sighting. A thylacine stops for a photograph. We're also going to talk about a sign, a grudge. The History Channel is about to turn a page in a new book. You might know what that's about. That's tonight, by the way. New York City, we're going to talk about that invasion that occurred by aliens. Yes, again, not just a movie this time. And we're going to talk again. This is scary. I've been talking about this show or this story since the show started, pretty much. The Salish Sea Shoe story is alive and kicking. Say that 10 times fast. The Salish Sea Shoe story is alive and kicking once again. And it's a tongue twister and it's a shoe twister as well. And it's kind of probably one of the most gruesome stories I've talked about. When you really think about it, it's kind of depressing at the same time, but it's interesting and it's neat. Even though it's been partially kind of explained, I still consider it a strange story, strange Earth type story. And you know, I mentioned, going to reflect back here for a second. I just want to reflect back on, my gosh, it's so long ago. It's almost a month ago. Back on December 16th, I was a guest on the Nightmare 365 podcast with hosts Matt and Greg. And I just want to mention again, they did a fantastic job. It was a great interview. I recommend that you not only listen to my interview, but check out their website, nightmare365.com, and subscribe to their YouTube page, as well as follow them on social media. Their show is live on Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. I don't think that can contribute or conflicts, I should say, with anything that's here on this network. But, yeah, check them out. They're great guys and very insightful and very curious about anything and everything, paranormally speaking. They do a fantastic job with all that. Let's see if I can get that link in there. There it is. Link is in the chat room. So if you're listening live, feel free. Jump in the chat room. You don't have to chat. We're not going to force you to talk. We might say hi to you. You don't even have to say hi. We'll be nice. We'll let you, we'll leave you alone. If you want to be in there and be left alone, that's fine. It's fine. Not a problem. If you're disruptive, we will give you the boot, however. But yeah, you're missing out on links, and we're going to have some pictures put in there as well to give a kind of an extra dynamic to the stories that I'm going to be talking about tonight and every night. Well, not every night. I only do this once a week. I don't have that much free time. Every Tuesday night. And yeah, Nightmare 365 with Matt and Greg. Their show, again, live on Sunday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern. Nightmare 365 podcast at nightmare365.com. And no, they're not paying me, although they did send me some cool swag in the mail. I got some stickers and postcards and things. Pretty cool stuff. They do a fantastic job. Yeah, any host that makes their guests feel important, which they did. They did a good job. Those are good hosts. And doing their homework on the guest, too, is also a plus. That's good. Good stuff. So anyway, I finally did. I know I've been talking about this for a while. I finally did spend a little bit of time talking, talking about paranormal conferences, conventions. Finally spent a little bit more time updating events on my events listing for 2019. Finally got around to it. Well, I had 2 weeks off. I should have done something, right? So you can check out the updated 2019 list of paranormal conferences, conventions at paranewsinsider.com. And you can then click on the events tab at the top. And I'm sure it's not done. I'm sure I've missed a few. And I know there's a few out there that are still kind of putting things together, and some that had just wrapped up in October, November. I get it. You kind of want to take a break. And I know there's a few out there that that are getting ready to announce things. And so I really don't like to put tentative stuff on there if I can help it. So I kind of avoid that, but I kind of keep notes so I know what to go and visit. But if you have any information about any event and would like to see it on the website as well, maybe I'll talk about it here on the show. Let me know at paranewsinsider.com, or you can just contact me through paranewsinsider.com. I have a contact page right there on the website. And gosh, I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. There's no reason that you cannot get a hold of me. I'm out there. I'm around. So let me know. I mean, I know it's a pretty darn good list. I think it's a pretty good list. But I know there's going to be some that are popping up. I know there's a few that I've seen that I have not gotten around to put on there yet. But again, if you know of any, just let me know, and I'll do my best. I'll get them on there as soon as I can. And also, yeah, the last show was December 18th. It seems so far long ago. I mean, it seems like a year ago. Well, it was a year ago. I wrapped up the 2018 Paranormal News Insider with the final top. Well, the top 10. I think it was the last four I did on that show. So the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018. And again, don't worry, not going to rehash it again. And if you missed the countdown, shame on you. Well, you might want to go back and listen to that episode on your favorite podcast host of choice. But if you're into reading, you can now find a blog version of the 2018 Top 10. And you can head to paranewsinsider.com and click on the blog link at the top of the page and get there. And for my folks there in the chat room, I just so happen to have a link to that right available right here. And so I'll throw that in the chat room so you guys can bookmark that or zone out while I'm talking. And I don't recommend that. And check it out. It's pretty much directly from my notes when I did the top 10. So it's kind of, you can almost read along. If you want to read along to my words, as I softly, gently rock the microphone back and forth. Number one, the number one story of the 2018 Paranormal News Insider Countdown. How could you forget what number one was? The saddest story of the year. Well, I'll tell you what number two was. The Sunspot Observatory evacuation. And the number one story of 2018 was sadly the death of Art Bell, which occurred on Friday, April 13th. So this is a little teaser for you. The rest of it, you're going to have to read about. Yeah. But it was fun. I enjoy putting that in writing because then it's there. There's a record. It's documented. And again, it's just my view of things. Don't get all upset because your favorite story didn't even crack the top 10. You know, it's hard enough to kind of figure out when you have a kind of a, I don't want to say a dull year, but there really wasn't too many that really jumped out this year. So I did my best and I just do it how I feel with some criteria of how viral stories were and things like that. So we'll see. I mean, 2019, we've got a long way to go. We've had a couple of stories that did happen in January of last year that ended up making the top 10. So you never know. And maybe we're going to have some really big stories. We should have some big announcements this year as well. I know the Otago DNA search, which we're going to talk about here in a second, that should be released sometime in the next couple of months. And that's going to it's going to cause some waves. Maybe on Loch Ness, about the potential reality of the Loch Ness Monster. And who knows what else could be coming out in 2019. I don't know. I think it's kind of a Jim Mallard topic. You know, maybe he'll talk about, I think he did talk about that. Did you talk about that, Jim? About what's coming up this year? You usually do the kind of the forecast of the year, which I appreciate. I always get excited about what could be. But for me, I like to reflect back a little bit more than that. I'm not psychic. Don't claim to be. I don't want that burden. People ask me what the lottery numbers are going to be. Predictions? Yes, he did. He did predictions, as he always does. So anyway, yeah. So speaking of reading, that's my segue, and I'm sticking to it. Books. I love books. I probably have a book addiction. I have way too many books. I have books piled up. I have three bookcases. I have books piled up on top of the bookcases, books piled into drawers, books piled on the floor. I have books in my car, for crying out loud. I've got books everywhere, but I can tell you what I'm reading. I can tell you exactly what I'm reading, exactly what pages I'm on, and the five books that I'm currently reading right now. But yeah, I love this gap. Maybe I might be bringing back the book of the week. I don't have one this week, per se, but it's kind of, yeah, I do need more book stands. I do have I would like to bring the book of the week back, but it's just a lot of work. And I love Christmas because that's when I usually ask for books. And I got a lot of books last year. And this year I got some really interesting paranormal books. Anybody else get any books they want to brag about before I get too far into this? Well, I'll just tell you this. Just talking about some of the, I don't know, just different lake monsters. We're going to be talking about that story here in a second. I did get one from Ronald L. Murphy Jr., personally autographed copy of Ronald L. Murphy Jr.'s On Lake Monsters, an investigation into the legends and sightings of unknown animals. Well, kind of wanted this book for a little while. Ron's actually a good friend of mine, fellow researcher, great writer, and even better researcher. Guy's awesome. I love his stuff. It just goes, you just feel like you get sucked down a rabbit hole, and he can speak to his research, which is just awesome. I look forward to meeting up with him sometime on the road, somewhere this year. I'm not sure where, but we always seem to cross paths, so I'm not worried about that right now. Also got another mountain lion book. Anybody that knows me, listens to the show, knows I have a fascination with mountain lions. I think I got 5 or 6 last year for Christmas, give or take, and a couple more I bought during the year. This year, I got a book called Path of the Puma, The Remarkable Resilience of the Mountain Lion by Jim Williams. This book is new. It just came out, I believe, in October of 2018. So it's one of the newer books. I'm really excited about reading this one. Jim is a wildlife biologist in Montana. So he knows what he's talking about. Some of the books I buy are just by naturalists. I consider myself a naturalist as well. And, you know, I started writing a mountain lion book myself. And it's just, I don't know what it is about the topic. I'm not a huge cat person, more of a dog person. But I don't know. The mountain lion saga just fascinates me. And it's kind of a conspiracy theory, too, which I'm not really into. But this is really interesting stuff. So I got suckered into that. Now I'm on, like, I don't know, 10, 12 books that I have on mountain lions. And what else do I have? I have a whole bunch of stuff here. Gosh, what was the one I just got? The Black Cats. Oh, boy. Can't remember. Anyway, well, we'll move on. What was the name of that? It's going to drive me nuts now. Anyway, what else did I get? Oh, Benjamin Radford. How could I forget about that? I got this before Christmas. Benjamin Radford, in case you weren't aware, has a new book. Benjamin Radford is a skeptic, but he's a pretty level-headed skeptic. He's not one of those skeptics that's yelling and screaming at you, telling you why you're believing in this stuff. He's not going to discount everything you're doing, but he thinks that ghost hunters are going about things the wrong way, which I have to agree with him. Things are out in the field, they're just not going in the right manner. Things are just not really looking very good, for lack of a better term. And Benjamin Radford, this is his, kind of his second book on this kind of stuff. He did have one that was just about, it was called Scientific Paranormal Investigation. It was just a basic book on just basic stuff of paranormal. It wasn't specifically ghosts, but it was kind of spread out with different things. And wasn't specific to ghosts. It also had a lot of cryptozoology, a lot of UFO stuff in it, as well as his local research. And his new book this year, I should say last year at this point, 2018, came out. And it's more on the ghosts. It's all ghost stuff. It's called Investigating Ghosts, The Scientific Search for Spirits. And I actually just finished up a review of that book. I finished reading it, I think, about 2 weeks ago now. And it's going to be appearing in a magazine in a couple of months, which I'm really excited about that, to see my name in print on a review of a book. Now, one of my books, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, was reviewed in the Skeptical Inquirer magazine. So it's kind of like interesting that I'm going to be putting a review in about a book. The magazine, well, I kind of just said it, the Skeptical Inquirer. And I don't know when that's going to be out. It's not going to be this next issue. It's probably going to be the issue after that. And I'll keep everybody posted about that whenever that comes out. Should be out. I can't remember what they said, but I'll get a proof of that to make sure it's all well and good. And then it'll be out, I want to say like March or April, somewhere around there. It's going to drive me nuts trying to find this book. I don't see it. Well, We're going to find it. We're going to find it. It's going to be here somewhere. Can't believe that. It's in my car. That's why I can't remember what it was. But yeah, Benjamin Radford's book, it's really, really in depth. I mean, my gosh, he leaves no stone unturned because it's, I mean, come on. Some of the stuff that happens out there in the ghost field, it's kind of ridiculous. It is. I mean, you have to admit it. There's just some really outlandish things that happen out there in the ghost field, and it needs to be addressed. If not by people like me, then by a skeptic. And again, he's not trying to disprove or tell people what you're doing is bunk. He's just trying to help us realize what a lot of the things that's going on out there. It's just not working. It's not working. I do need a secretary. That would be great. But excited to see the review of that book out there. And again, we'll talk a little bit more about that book in the future. And who knows? Maybe I will bring back the book of the week. It was just a lot of work. My gosh, I have, you know, just digging out a book. But I think my issue was I was trying to match a book with what was going on in the stories that week. And sometimes I would be ready to have one book and I have to quickly shift to another book. And I think that was my issue. But anyway, one book that, I'll talk about the other book. I finally remembered what it was called. It's called Shadow Cats, The Black Panthers of North America. That book came out in early 2018 and was on the top of my list all year long. And just kept buying other things. That happens, right? We end up buying other things that we don't need or we don't really need, I guess, but we kind of want. And that book, it just kept sitting there at the top of my list. I never got it. But Shadow Cats is about the Black Panthers of North America, and it's written by Michael Mays. It's basically kind of like a Texas book. It's based on a lot of the sightings that happened down in Texas, but I love regional stuff. I think it's really interesting, which is weird because I'm not really too much into regional ghost stuff, but I do read it on occasion. But the Black Panther, Mountain Lion, anything like that is really good. And this book is very, very good. It's very well written, and it's the content in it is definitely well beyond what I expected. No offense. I kind of didn't expect it to be this good. It's really, really good. I'm very happy that I bought it. Well, I didn't buy it. I got it for Christmas. Happy I got it, I guess. But it's very, very level-headed written, if that's a phrase I could use. It's very, very good. And out of the 8 reviews I see here on Amazon, it's got 5 stars, 5 out of 5. So I agree. It is 5 out of 5 stars. Very good book. And I'm not even done with it yet. But I kind of got a little excited and cheated and kind of skimmed through it a little bit. But anyway, got to move along. One last book I want to mention that I've not said anything about to anybody. I'm so excited about this book. This has been a long time coming. I've wanted this book for a long time. When I say a long time, probably 20 years. Yeah. I finally forked out a little bit of money for this thing. And it's published way back in 1977. And on the front cover, it said that it was sold for $1.95. I wish I would have paid that much. I think I paid more in shipping than that. But it's a book, again, it's been on my list for the longest time, the longest book I've had on my list. And I decided finally I've got to get it. This book is actually based on the research of Kenneth J. Batchelder that eventually created one of the most famous experiments in the ghost field. So his work led to what was called the Philip Experiment, which occurred in Toronto. You might be familiar with that. So Batchelder's work also became part of my work, the E4 method. I got my hands on as much stuff as I could from different journals and different articles and even videos that I was able to dig up, and had a lot of researchers sending me stuff of Batchelder's work, which is very hard to find. So I was really, really excited about this. And this book is basically cherry on top of everything, all the work that I've done, all the writing and researching and experimentations, different things that I've done out in the field. Part of my E4 method of client-centered ghost investigations, but one of my best memories was back in November of 2017. when I got to see and touch one of the cardboard tables used in the Philip experiment. It was also signed by some of the participants. I was giddy. You know, some people get excited about meeting movie celebrities and, you know, seeing sports figures or getting their shoes signed or something. I don't know. Me, I get excited about seeing weird stuff like that in person. The book is called, well, it's about the Philip experiment, and it's called Conjuring Up Philip, An Adventure in Psychokinesis. It's written by Iris M. Owen, and Iris was the secretary of the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, which created this experiment. And what many don't realize is actually the Philip experiment demonstrated that ghostly phenomena could be created by the living through psychokinesis, and spirits or ghosts were not necessary. And so a lot of people in the ghost field think that this is fantastic stuff and it proves that ghosts exist. It actually does quite the opposite. But I'm not saying it's a perfect experiment. There's a lot of flaws in this research. But still, to me, it was an amazing run. And it was basically table tipping and contact sessions. But yeah, I got to brag about this book because this book is really hard to find and really, really expensive. That's really really the difficult thing is finding a book that's under $100. Let me see if it's still in the Amazon bookstore. Yeah, I got one for $50 in there. Yeah, that's all right. It's a little bit too much for me. I got a less than that. Anyway, almost halfway through the show, and we're still not even in the news. So how about we get into the news real quick? Let me check. Let's see. This book is 239 pages. It's good. It's good. Trust me, it's good. It's a good book. No one's going to get this book either. I'm not giving it, not going to let anybody read it unless I'm standing right there. Plenty of books that I've used to have that I let people borrow that I never got back. Anyway, cryptid news tonight. Again, I was talking about this a little earlier about lake monsters. Not really a frequenter of the Coast to Coast website. I do tune into the show every now and again, but not too frequently. But Tim Banal has a nice article on the Coast to Coast website talking about the many sea monster sightings of 2018. And the Loch Ness Monster had a banner year with a record 14 sightings added to the official Loch Ness Monster Register, which is kept by Gary Campbell. This is the highest number of sightings in the 21st century and the most since 1996's 17 sightings. Banal also mentions the new technology that has helped capture potential images of the Loch Ness Monster, including the Loch Ness webcam and Google Earth. Actually, Google Earth, it's been around for a while, almost 18 years at this point. He also points out that tourism to Loch Ness contributes about $33 million to the local economy each year, which is probably why the Loch Ness Monster will never be determined as not possible, at least by locals. But the DNA expedition that took place this summer, led by Professor Neil Gemmel of the University of Otago, might change that. Those DNA results collected in the loch will determine what creatures are lurking there, with the results should be released sometime this spring. But again, even when they don't find DNA of any kind of creature that would be thought to be the Loch Ness Monster, don't think that's going to be the end of the Loch Ness Monster. Guarantee you, sightings will continue. British Columbia's Okanagan Lake was also the site of three separate sightings in the month of September of 2018, which brought this legendary creature out of retirement. The article also mentions water monsters seen in Albania, Germany, England, and China last year that all told didn't get much publicity. The article parts with a positive look as Nessie was honored on a coin last year, and Champ from Vermont's Lake Champlain may soon be seen on a commemorative license plate, which I also talked about that. So it's going to be pretty cool stuff. And I think from the last time I read anything about that, it's getting closer. It may actually happen for Vermont to have that plate. That's going to be really cool. Really cool. And, yeah, a name that we've not mentioned. Well, let me get this link in the chat room real quick before I get too far ahead of myself. So a name that I didn't mention, I don't know if I mentioned it at all last year or just not very much. Didn't really have a very recognizable year last year. The Thylacine. Thylacine is in the news this week, and you know, we talked about lake monsters, and Timbadook kind of talked about Bigfoot. You know, Bigfoot is the big creature that's always tops in the news. Well, I think really lake monsters really put a beat down on Bigfoot last year. I really don't think Bigfoot made too much of a dent. So we could be seeing a swing toward more of these lake monsters, and we could be seeing a swing towards other monsters instead of just Bigfoot out there on the prowl. But hey, it's still early. It's only the 8th of January, so we don't know what's going to be happening. So the Thylacine news dropped off in 2018, but I'm excited to see a story in the news already in the first week of the new year. That's exciting. A farmer named Peter Groves. How ironic is that? Peter Groves is a farmer. Anyway, he spotted what he feels was a living thylacine or Tasmanian tiger while in Clifton Springs in the state of Victoria in Australia. So, yes, the thylacine is an Australian creature. Clifton Springs is on the southeast part of the large island country and is southwest of Melbourne. And, yes, Australia is a continent, but Australia as a continent also includes other island nations that don't belong to Australia. Just wanted to throw that out there. I've actually had that discussion lately with a couple of people. Groves stated that the animal did not seem afraid of him and stood there for about 5 minutes of his encounter. Groves said, quote, "It could just be a mangy fox, but it seems to be bigger than a fox, and it's not shy." And he said it was funny looking with a big long tail and stumpy ears, unquote. Well, the thylacine does have kind of biggish ears. It also has stripes on its back. And a weird-looking tail that's got a kind of a big, thick part that comes out of the rump, and a nice, long, straight tail. So could this be the long-lost carnivorous marsupial that was last seen alive back in 1936? I don't know. We'll have to wait. Well, we'll wait. Another time. The last living specimen died in captivity at the Hobart Zoo when it was accidentally left out in the elements overnight back in 1936. What a sad way to go out. The thylacine was essentially hunted into extinction, however, because kind of very similar thought to the mountain lions and wolves of North America. The thylacine was thought to be killing things there in Australia. So, well, they struck first and pretty much wiped everything out. And sadly, the poor guy is gone. But we maintain hope. You know, the thylacine is looked at as one of the top potential long-term, well, it's not really that long, but big names out there of cryptids that could be rediscovered sometime. But the more time that goes by, I don't know. I just don't know if there's a chance of the thylacine being rediscovered. I'm still hopeful. Don't get me wrong. It's still on my list of creatures that I really would like to see discovered. Would really put the kind of put some of the skeptical people down. Like, you know, they're saying there's no way. It's zero possibility. I know that I did a story on the odds of a thylacine being discovered. It was like, would you have more of a chance of getting bit by a shark and struck by lightning and winning the lottery all on the same day? But I don't think it's that bad. I think there's a pretty good chance. Now, do I think this picture is of a thylacine? Not really. I don't think so. It's kind of hard to kind of figure out. I did forget to make one for the show. I apologize. I'll try to make up for that later on in the show, however. And let me throw that link in the chat room. And again, you're not listening live here on the ParanormalKing.com, the Paranormal King Radio Network, well, you're missing out. Missing out on live chat, live links, and live pictures right here on the network. But, you know, don't feel bad. I get it. A lot of people want to listen to the show later on. That's how I am, too. Sometimes listening live, I just don't have the time, or I'm doing other work, and that's why I always seem to miss other shows out there, like the Mallard Report, same night, an hour, well, right after my show ends. I always seem to miss it. Anyway, thylacine, we'll find out. Now to UFO news. Big news in the UFO field. Tonight is the night. Yes, tonight is the debut. Seems like I was just talking about this like a year ago. It's going to come out next year, I said. Yes, the debut of the History Channel television show Project Blue Book. Project Blue Book is obviously based on the real files of the Project Blue Book, which was conducted from 1952 until early 1970. Now, this is the third such project of conducting investigations into purported unidentified flying object and alien sightings. Of course, after Project Sign in 1947 and Project Grudge in 1949. While this new series will be groundbreaking for a UFO series, some reviews that I've seen come out lately, it's got me a little worried. I don't know. I'm still going to kind of go into it. I'm trying not to build it up too much in my mind, but it still looks really good. And I'm just going to just take it tongue-in-cheek. It's not going to be 100% truthful. It's not going to be a complete documentary of anything. It's just basically taking all this information and making a 10-episode series out of it. I'm a little worried that the truth and fiction are really going to be blurred together and that the viewer is not going to know what is what. And they've kind of done that on purpose because they want you to do your own research. They want you to look things up and kind of judge for yourself, which I get. But when you're presenting things in a certain way, it kind of makes people feel like that's the truth and that's the way it's, the way I'm hearing how they're going to do it, it's not going to be that good. It's going to be, they're basically going to show you the most dramatic story out of all the hypotheses about how a story went, and that's the one they're going to go with. It's TV. That's what they're going to do. And so you're going to be less inclined to believe other variations of those stories when you finally read about it yourself. So kind of not happy with that angle, if that is the truth, but that's kind of what I've been reading about. Spoilers. I can handle the truth. I'd like to know the truth. And the truth, as they say, is out there somewhere on a flatbed truck or in a on a pallet up on the steel somewhere in a warehouse in Virginia. Great. They know that I know. I'm going to hear a loud rap on the door any second now. Anyway, granted, the truth has already been blurred together already. By a lot of people that want to believe, and people who have purportedly said that they were there or they know something or they're a whistleblower. These things happen all the time where people kind of inject their own thoughts or their dreams into what they think or how they think a UFO sighting should have gone and went. So we don't really know too much of the actual truth. We just know what the government documented, but we know that they had kind of an angle on things, which we're going to see tonight on this show. A good portion of the action, more than likely, going to be the fictional accounts of the events, going with the more dramatic explanations, like I said, as well as adding a bit of dramatic license as well. Sadly, being on the History Channel, you would think it would be historically accurate, but at least it's going to be entertaining. And I'm still going to watch it. I don't care how bad of a review anybody gives it. I think it's worth watching. We don't have a whole lot of good UFO stuff on TV. I know MUFON's excited about it. They were sending out emails again today about you got to watch the show. So the UFO field in general is really excited about this. And who knows what this could do for UFO sightings on television and talking about this general subject. I mean, this could really opened the door for a little bit more discussion about this in the mainstream media, which lately has been really, really good to UFOs. They really haven't been as closed off as they used to be about this kind of stuff. And so I'm kind of excited to see, really not so much just the show, but how the show is going to have kind of an effect on things around it. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. So Project Blue Book follows the journey of J. Allen Hynek as he dives into the world of UFO sightings in a 10-episode series. The series starts tonight, debut on the History Channel, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. But as always, be sure to check your local listings. And that means I can still watch it. It should be on demand as well, a couple of days after. So you go to the History Channel, and you can watch it there as well. So don't have a link for that story. The link is your TV. Actually, I do. Stand corrected. Well, I sit corrected, more specifically. So let me throw that link there in the chat room. It's from history.com. Yes, history.com. It's about the TV show, so you can actually watch the preview. If you click on that link, it'll show you some of the previews for the show, some clips and different things for that. And that's also the link that you're going to want to go to. If you do miss tonight's episode, you want to go back. And I'll be posting these links that I'm posting in the chat room. Don't worry. Again, if you're not able to make it in the chat room and you want to listen to your podcast host of choice, these links will be available to you. And during the week through my socials, social medias, is that they kids still call that? I don't know. I'm not a kid anymore. I don't know if they call it socials. Check out my socials. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, those are intertwined. So anything I post on one usually follows the other. But I get a little excited with Twitter because when I find other stuff on Twitter, I tend to retweet it quite a bit. It's usually funny stuff. So all these stories will be made through there during the week, so I'm not going to post all of them at once, and you'll be able to check them out. Anyway, in other news tonight, so I've mentioned it a couple of times. We talked about the top two, the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2018 wrapped up back on December 18th, and I said that it was unlikely that any major story that came out in the last 2 weeks of the year would even remotely break the top 10, that it probably wouldn't happen. Well, I was almost wrong. On Thursday, December 22nd, around 9:12 p.m. Eastern, an unusual event occurred in the Astoria area of Queens in New York City. The sky was lit up with a bright flash of blue for several seconds. The incident took place at the Astoria East and North Queens Con Edison plant on 20th Avenue and 32nd Street in Astoria. Con Ed issued a statement on what happened, stating, quote, "An electrical fault on a section of 138,000-volt equipment in one of our Astoria substations caused a transmission disturbance and sustained electrical arc flash, creating the blue light people witnessed. The equipment that malfunctioned is associated with voltage monitoring within the substation," unquote. So early reports of this being a transformer explosion, which is to me kind of what it looked like with the blue, bright blue flash, which anytime you have a blue flash like that, it's going to be more than likely aluminum burning. I learned that a long time ago. Not a pyromaniac. I just learned that through science-y stuff. It was pretty bright and pretty frightening as well. I mean, anytime anything like that happens in a major metro area, it's going to cause a little bit of nervousness. People are going to think the worst. The equipment that malfunctioned was supposed to monitor voltage when it suddenly allowed the voltage to just enter the air. The electricity caused ionized gases to become visible as plasma, which sounds all technically cool and stuff, but essentially it breaks down to meaning that we made man-made lightning. It's pretty much what we did by accident. Social media again went into high alert, thinking that this was anything from a UFO invasion, which was the leading thing, to Godzilla. There's a lot of thought of Godzilla. I guess Godzilla did invade New York. I think he's mostly known for Japan, but I guess he did make it to New York the one time. Once. And of course, everything else down to a potential terrorist event, which is scary to think about. There is even a bit of conspiracy theory floating around, especially even in the mainstream media, because they feel that this was an explosion of some sort and not just electrical arcing. And there's investigations going on into this. They think there's a cover-up. Spooky. The eerie blue light caused a staggering 3,200 plus 911 calls to pour in shortly after 9:12 p.m. And panic, yeah, you could say that. And that was in a half hour. 3,200 phone calls to 911 in a half hour. That's crazy. And the days that followed, the talk of an alien invasion were so popular that even New York Governor Andrew Cuomo jokingly said during a press conference, quote, "We did find one piece of evidence that is a little peculiar. This was on the site, which has raised some questions," unquote, as he held up the mask, a rubber mask of an alien. We haven't seen that kind of stuff since the Phoenix Lights incident, really. That happened back then. The governor back then held up there was a guy in a suit, actually, that showed up to a press conference. So kind of deja vu to me, because I've kind of seen that before. And there's an image of it, the governor holding up the mask of an alien. And that looked really serious. When he said it, he wasn't laughing or anything, which kind of made me wonder. Maybe there is something to this. But yeah, that was a leading thought by a lot of people. A lot of memes made of this, of a giant alien standing in front of this blue light, and people saying it was an alien attack, and all sorts of stuff. But no, it was just a normal incident, but it did have a lot of people freaked out about this. And one side story that caught my attention with this reminded me of one of my all-time favorite movies. We've talked about a lot of books. Let's talk a movie here for a second. The 1986 movie Highlander, which featured sword-wielding immortals who were hell-bent on winning the prize while battling with swords in New York City during the time of the gathering, when those who remained battled to the last, because as we know, there can be only one. Spencer Pesce, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Spencer Pesce of Queens had other ideas, which is weird. It's Queens because Queen, the band, did the soundtrack to the movie Highlander. It's kind of weird here. Spencer of Queens had other ideas when he grabbed his samurai sword and headed outside during what was initially thought to be, again, a transformer explosion. Well, he thought the city was being invaded by aliens. So I guess this was the initial reaction by a lot of people. So he was watching television when the incident occurred. And of the incidents, Spencer said, quote, "I looked outside and it was bright as day. It was flashing blue. And there was like a humming, like a giant machine starting up. You know, like a giant alien spaceship starting up, like what you see in the movies," unquote. I don't remember hearing giant star machines like aliens. Anyway, I don't know. I guess he's got some logic there somewhere. So he did what most young Americans would do. He grabbed his samurai sword, his boots, and he went outside to watch with others as the sky lit up blue. I don't know. I thought it was funny. It was a funny story. But the whole thing got really big, and I kind of got nervous there that was going to maybe potentially knock out one of the top 10 stories, but I don't know. I think it just kind of fell flat. It was a pretty big story there for a little bit, but yeah, I think it kind of fell flat. And I'll throw that link there in the chat room. Yep. And got one last story here. And I remember there was a kind of sidetracked. I've been trying to keep up here with the, that's my New Year's resolution this year, is to keep up with the chat room, keep a closer eye on the chat room and what y'all are talking about and answering questions and make it a little bit more interactive. That's my New Year's resolution. And I kind of sidestepped the question. I was in the middle of doing kind of in my little rant, and there was a question about me being a paranormal investigator. I can't see. Okay. Asking me, I do the news. Am I also a paranormal investigator? Well, yes. That's how I got my start back in 1996. I started working kind of doing research into ghosts, and one thing led to another. Ended up being on a ghost team and worked with the team, named the team, and was unfortunately, I don't know, well, I guess fortunately, named the leader of this group unceremoniously. I didn't take it on myself, but I started running this group for 15 years. I led a group, but in the interim, I was also a UFO researcher, worked with and was trained by MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, as a UFO investigator, and worked with a number of groups in cryptozoology. And I still continue to this day to take cases. I don't really investigate ghost cases too much because I don't have a team, and I don't really feel safe enough to go into somebody's house by myself to investigate ghosts. Not because I'm afraid of ghosts, but I'm afraid of the living more so than anything. But I'm probably more of a researcher than investigator anymore, but I know my way around equipment and investigations. And I do sometimes, well, I'll go out to a conference or convention. I'm also a public speaker, go out to those things, and sometimes we will do investigations out there with people. So, yeah, I'm still kind of involved in the field a little bit, but I'd say more in cryptozoology than anything. And King has a question about the explosion. Well, explosion was more than likely just caused by faulty equipment. And it wasn't an explosion. They just said an electrical fault. So a part basically just malfunctioned. 138,000 of volts leaked out and just created a nice little arc in the air. So they're saying it was an accident, not an explosion. But that's people are arguing about that. They're not sure if that's legitimate or not. So one last story, and this is a disturbing story. And so I kept it last. So maybe the kitties are tucked away in bed. This is, I don't want to say scary, but kind of gruesome if you think about it. And like I've said, I've followed the story for years, kind of when it became popular. It came popular right before I started the show, and I kind of mentioned it a couple of times. It really picked up back in 2008, but it started a year prior to that, and it is a little gruesome. The story does start back on, August 20th of 2007. When a girl visiting the Jedediah Island in British Columbia, Canada, just so happened to see a shoe lying on the beach. And she picked up this size 12 Adidas shoe, which is pretty big. And she discovered what was to be found out to be the remains of a foot inside of a sock. Since then, what has gone on to unofficially be named the Salish Sea Human Foot Discoveries has seen 15 discoveries through May of 2018 in the Pacific Northwest area surrounding Vancouver Island down into Puget Sound to Seattle and Tacoma. The Salish Sea is a term meant to describe the area away from the Pacific Ocean surrounding Vancouver Island, which includes the Strait of Juan de Fuca, the Strait of Georgia, Puget Sound, and all of their connecting channels and adjoining waters, such as the Haro Strait, the Rosario Strait, Bellingham Bay, Hood Canal, and so on and so forth. A lot of bodies of water. It's a large area. But just think Seattle, Vancouver, Victoria, even Tacoma. So all those cities are bordering this large body of water. The second case occurred less than a week later, August 26th of 2007. Another five cases occurred in 2008, one in 2009, two in 2010, and three in 2011, one more in 2012, another in 2014, two in 2016, one in 2017, and also one in 2018. And just a week ago, the 20th such case has been reported. Weird. This latest discovery occurred on the what's called Jetty Island near Everett, Washington, which is weird. I was just in that area a couple years ago, which is essentially near the center of the Foote discoveries, if you're looking at it on a map. This discovery, well, more on the eastern edge, but kind of central in the sightings of north and south area. The discovery was a boot. You know, not speaking Canadian here, a boot, you know, you put on your foot, a boot. It apparently seems to have been floating for what police commented was some time. We don't know exactly how long, but these things can happen. They can float for a while. Even bodies, believe it or not, I always thought bodies decompose really fast, but they say that a human body can actually survive about 3 years in the ocean, unless it's eaten. It's creepy. Officials are currently analyzing the find to determine whether it's actually a human foot. Well, you'd think a Adidas size 12 shoe would be a human foot, but when this case originally began to become a big news story back in 2008, after multiple discoveries, and this is worldwide news, and this is a big deal. Like, this was covered on a lot of major news stations, and it was in all kinds of worldwide newspapers back then. There were actually a few hoaxes created using meat stuffed into socks and shoes. I don't know why you'd want to hoax that, but people did. But stories of feet being found inside of boots can be traced back to an event happening back in 1887. Even further back. So this is not a new thing. It's not like the Bermuda Triangle of feet, where they're just appearing in this area all of a sudden. This has been happening for a while. Now, of these 20 feet discovered, there are two matching pairs. What are the odds of that? Pretty slim, actually. One pair of women's feet found inside of blue and white New Balance sneakers on May 22, 2008 and November 11, 2008 belonged to a suicide victim who jumped from a bridge. These feet essentially became separated during decomposition and held afloat during, due to the materials inside the shoe, which also helps preserve the body part. Many proposed explanations, including the victims from the Asian tsunami that occurred on December 26, 2014, to missing people who were either involved in accidents or suicides, which I would have to say the latter explanation is probably the more correct, since there's been more feet discovered prior to the 2014 incident. The Salish Sea provides thousands of miles of beaches to the dozens of islands in Canada and Washington, as well as to the large cities, again, Vancouver, Victoria, in Canada, Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia, and a lot of other shipping towns that are along this waterway. And the ocean, Pacific Ocean, the water essentially flows in from the ocean for the most part. So anything that occurs in there isn't going to get swept out to sea. It's going to find its way to a local beach. So if you're ever on vacation up in that area, keep an eye out on the beach for a shoe. And you just might make another discovery of the Salish Sea shoe sightings. Say that 10 times fast again. It's kind of weird because I've been to that area. I've been to, was in Vancouver back in 2006. And since then, I've been to Seattle, I think I want to say three or four times. I've lost track. Probably four times. Been to Alaska twice, through Seattle and once through Vancouver. But also, I've been to Seattle a couple of times and been to Vancouver, been to Victoria. So I've been in that area a lot. And I've actually stayed on the San Juan Islands, which is pretty much dead center of where all these sightings have occurred. Kept my eye out, never seen one. And I've been sure to keep my shoes out of the water, that's for sure. But it's what's weird about that is one time, this is recently, 2014, the only time I've ever purposely taken a photograph of my foot before was actually in a boat about 10 miles off the coast of Victoria, Canada. Maybe I was almost going to be a victim of this. Maybe I was going to appear as one of these 20 sightings. So I was on the bow of a small whale-watching boat when a few of the southern resident orca decided to swim under the boat. A few of the over 100 at the time, there was 103, I think they're down to like 92 now. I took a picture, and I purposely, again, took a picture of my foot because I wanted to use some scale, a little reference to how close these orca were as they went under the boat. I don't know why that's what that has to do with anything, but I just thought it was weird, my foot, and being out in the Salish Sea. And let me show you a picture of my foot. You can't tell, but it's still attached to my body. And you can see the orca whale passing underneath. It was a little boat. It was a small boat. Oh, but there he is. That's real. That's not SeaWorld, folks. That's out in the wild. And that is my foot story from the Salish Sea. And I still have my feet attached. And I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I finally sadly threw those shoes away late last year. Sad, because I usually don't get attached to shoes, but it was so cool to have that memory of those shoes. I know, that's weird. Anyway, that's the show for tonight. Thank you for tuning in the chat room. I appreciate you guys. And these orca, actually, they only eat salmon. They don't really eat anything else. They wouldn't have eaten me if I fell in. They're the friendly ones. Now, the transients, those are the ones that eat seals and sharks and everything else. But these guys, they're good guys. They only eat salmon. Anyway, again, don't forget, if you have any information about paranormal conferences, conventions that I didn't make in my list, feel free to contact me at insider@paranewsinsider.com. And yeah, thanks again for showing up, for tuning in and listening, and allowing me to crawl into your brain for an hour and 2 minutes. But who's counting? But I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.